But first today, the Department of Health has confirmed 2,427 new cases of COVID-19. There are 449 people in hospital, and 93 of which are being treated in ICU. Paul Reid, CEO of the HSE, joins me now from our Athlone studio. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Paul, the latest wave of COVID-19 infections is putting pressure on intensive care units and hospitals all around the country, being forced to cancel surgeries. Can you give us an update on the situation in relation to that?
Yeah, if I can address your question from two perspectives. First, what's happening in the hospitals and then ICU. In a hospital perspective, as you mentioned, we have 450 cases now, just about, in hospital-positive COVID cases. Which is putting severe pressure across our hospital system. We do expect those numbers to rise throughout the weekend and indeed over the next few weeks. So that's a really cause of concern for us. It is no doubt when we take in context COVID, but also the other illnesses that we're treating, increased respiratory illnesses coming through, early identifications of flu, and emergency attendance is up very significantly based on delayed care from COVID. Huge pressure on our hospitals. Resulting impact is, I suppose, in terms of elective care, a number of hospitals across the country have had to take decisions to cease elective care for some points of time, maybe not completely.
Can I ask you which hospitals we're talking about?
Yeah, across the six hospital groups in total, including Children's Health Ireland, and about 20 hospitals overall across the country. So certainly in Limerick, Galway, Navan, Wexford, Cork. Pretty much various hospitals around the country, including Children's Health Ireland, they've had to take a number of actions to, in many cases, not completely cease, but certainly turn down elective care and in some cases stop for a period of time. So we are beginning to see the pressure and the resourcing that's required to address COVID impact on non-COVID care and particularly elective care.
What kind of procedures are being cancelled now?
It'll be a range of procedures, but obviously urgent care. If people have urgent care, it's being treated. So cancer and cardiology and all urgent care. A couple of actions that we are taking just to relieve the pressure. We're still working with the private hospitals to take up some capacity, who they themselves, in fairness, have a reasonable limited capacity too. But we are roughly about 1,100 beds per week utilising private hospital capacity. I should say we had just finalised a set of actions to address the rising numbers of, I guess, the waiting list that we have, to try at least during the period of now December not have them rise. We're still very anxious to do that.
You going to be able to do that if you're dealing with the kind of numbers you're talking about now?
No, it's a real challenge for us, particularly as we head into the winter. This is going to be probably one of the most difficult winters we've faced in many years. So it is difficult for us. We are trying to put in some capacity out of hours in the public system and, as I mentioned, some extra capacity in the private system. But it's a real challenge from what we're seeing. From an ICU perspective, I'm going to just address briefly. I mean, we have 93 people in ICU. That is our real level of concern, because that's 93 out of 296 available ICU beds at the moment. And that's impacting particularly. And I would like to make the message quite strongly, you know, and we've been publishing this regularly, but, you know, 57% of the people in ICU have not been fully vaccinated, which is a strong impact on it. You know, if you take it, there's just over 300,000 of the population. You know, that's a big impact for us. And talking to Dr. Coleman O'Loughlin and Dr. Catherine Mudaway, who'll be two consultants in intensive care over the last 24 hours, you know, what they are seeing, particularly in ICU, are younger, unvaccinated people in the ages 30 to 40 years of age groups. And sadly, in some case, deaths to unvaccinated people under the age of 25. So I would make a really strong urge and call. We are a number of initiatives over the next week to support those people who are unvaccinated, who have any concerns they have, to come forward and be vaccinated.
So you want to get the message out there that just because you are not in the over 60s or even over 50s cohort, that you are still vulnerable and you could end up in ICU, and that's, you are seeing people in that age group in ICU right now.
Yeah, that age group, young age groups, unvaccinated. And for those who are vaccinated, it's predominantly comorbidities and immunosuppressed. I mean, I just make the point, Dr. Colin Lockham made this point to me, and anxious that I stress it. You know, the severity of COVID is something none of us should understate, because he was making the point to me, if a person is admitted to ICU, with severe HIV or AIDS, that person's chance of survival being admitted and treated is probably stronger than if you're admitted with severe COVID disease, because there's good treatments for HIV and those complications, but not such for COVID. So, you know, I really want to stress this is quite a serious illness impacting everybody and younger people, but you do have a higher level of protection if you're vaccinated.
Okay. Can I go back to the other care that's been compromised for a moment? And you mentioned there children's health is being compromised. We heard yesterday from your colleague Anne O'Connor that there were only 12 hospital beds available for children throughout the country, and no ICU beds were free yesterday. Can you tell us what the update on that is?
Yeah, it hasn't significantly changed. If you take across the country, there's about 120 beds available now. That can change in any given day, can range general beds. As of this morning, though, in terms of overall in children's hospitals, again, smaller numbers of beds, exactly as my colleague outlined yesterday, and of ICU beds available across the country. We have about 11 ICU beds, adult beds, but no ICU beds available for children at this moment point in time. So that is the pressure points we're seeing, we're experiencing. And I guess my call to everybody is, you know, we're in a difficult period. We're in a period where the society and enterprises open up, and we welcome that because everybody needs to get on and move on with their lives in a very safe way. But we have to do it in a very safe way, and a really urgent call to people. We can turn this around. This can be turned around as quickly as it turned around badly for us. It could be turned around positively, but it will need a really strong collective call to everybody, all of us individually, enterprise, business. Let's do things very safely.
What about booster shots then, Paul Reid, for the 60 to 80 year olds that NIAC have now approved? When will those people get their call?
Yeah, just say three things of boosters. So firstly, we're obviously progressing through the previously recommended immunocompromised people over 65 in long-term care facilities and those over 80, and making good progress throughout all of those. For the 60 to 80s, having received the recommendations from NIAC, we are putting together the operational plan about how we will go about this. We expect to have that finalised by the end of next week at the latest, and commence those over very shortly after that. And we would envisage it'll be about a 6 to 6 week period or so. But we will start and call. We will be proactively calling those people in the age of 60 to 80s.
And what will forward. Can they expect a text? How will it be organised?
Yeah, again, we're finalising the details in terms of the channels that we will do it between vaccination centres and other channels that we have, working with GPs and others. So we're finalising the detail, but people can expect to be contacted proactively in this case, because in the previous occasion you registered online, particularly for those aged 60 to 70. We will be making contact. We're obviously addressing those people based on a sequential basis. So the NIAC recommendation is, you know, within 6 months of their previous vaccination. So we will be working through that.
I just
make the point just on boosters, if I can. I mean, NIAC will continue to make recommendations where next after that. But I just would, again, make the point, we fully respect the NIAC, have the expertise in it. My concern is growing and heightening in terms of healthcare staff. You know, we increasingly have more and more staff out with COVID or symptomatic close contacts, about 1,800. That'll probably grow to 2,000 shortly. We're seeing more outbreaks, you know, and I think from my perspective, we have a duty of care to staff, we have a duty of care to vulnerable patients. So I would be really anxious that decision is made sooner rather than later. It's going to take us time anyway to vaccinate healthcare workers.
The INMO have been in touch with you in relation to this, haven't they?
Oh yeah, on a regular basis, in fairness. And you know, it's not just the trade unions or staff are regularly saying this to me. Our medics throughout, our chief clinical officer, we are all very, very anxious to get healthcare workers vaccinated. I am quite concerned with seeing outbreaks emerging. We know when the virus is so strong in the community, it increases the risk of outbreaks in healthcare settings. You know, and for example, we have all the residents in long-term care facilities fully vaccinated very shortly, those over 65, and we really wanted to make sure that the staff in those facilities are vaccinated too. So, you know, no, it's across the board. We're really anxious.
And in relation to that staffing crisis, if we can put it that way, is this going to have more knock-on effects for other care? Because presumably all you can do is redeploy staff from other care roles.
We do. Now, thankfully, we haven't reached the levels that we reached in January, and we don't expect to reach the levels that we reached in January, both in terms of hospitalisations, but equally in terms of healthcare staff out. But specifically to your question, yes, we are obviously on a significant recruitment campaign, but that takes time. And we do have to redeploy. And I know there's a constant expectation that when do we get into surge, particularly in terms of ICU. But surge is not a magic switch that we can turn on. Surge means moving people from one level of healthcare to another. And we are very anxious in the health service to address people's care beyond COVID and the waiting list that we have. That's a real cause of concern for us. So, yes, it would mean redeploying people. Particularly to surge, but it does mean taking people from other care.
Can I ask you then about COVID certs and the suggestion this week that they should be made compulsory for people visiting patients in hospitals and in nursing homes, because we are seeing an increase in outbreaks in both those settings now?
Yeah, well, I kind of separate the two issues. Certainly outbreaks is a cause of concern within healthcare settings, and we have to address that. We do know that when we have higher levels of community, it gets practically impossible to build a complete wall that transmission does not emerge into the healthcare settings, specifically related to having COVID certs for visitors. Look, we've heard that. We have to look at it. There's significant operational implications about how you would do that, how you'd operationalise. One of the things I want to make sure is we don't put an increased burden on our health staff in terms of what they're having to do, having to manage,
presumably, if you were operating this policy for visitors, there would then be questions asked about vaccination status of staff again.
Yeah, and 2 points on that, just to make relative to my previous point, you know, we would be urging people to get vaccinated. So certainly if your loved ones or family members are in hospital to get vaccinated, or in a long-term care facility to get vaccinated for those visits. Secondly, and specifically the healthcare staff, yes, I mean, I've consistently said this. First of all, we have an extremely high uptake, probably one of the highest uptakes in many healthcare settings across the world of our healthcare workers getting vaccinated, and that's good. But I would make a very strong call to any other healthcare workers who haven't. We would expect people, healthcare workers, to take up this vaccination. And thankfully, we have seen a huge, strong take-up.
Okay. If I can move you away from COVID just for a moment, because the Irish Times is reporting today that a Garda investigation into the prolonged sexual abuse at a HSE-run disability facility in County Donegal has closed, with the DPP instructing there should be no prosecution. This unpublished report from the National Independent Review Panel found devastating abuse had been perpetrated on mainly non-verbal adults by another resident with the full knowledge of staff and management. Minister of State Anne Rabbitt has reiterated her call for the full report to be published, as have the families of the victims here who spoke to Kitty Holland. Are you now, or is the HSE now, going to publish the report in full, Paul Reid?
Yeah, I'll just make a few points on this. First of all, this is the first such report that has come to myself, on my watch since I've joined the HSE. And I've been very anxious that we do everything with this appropriately and we don't compromise any step along the way, which has happened in previous reports. Immediately brought this report to our board, our Safety and Quality Committee of the board are overseeing all of our steps in relation to this, and equally in terms of notification to An Garda Síochána. We are taking the full advice from An Garda Síochána about when and what appropriate time we can publish this report. First of all, I'm extremely anxious to publish this. The reports, the detail of this report are quite gruesome, quite difficult to read. And I do want to make sure that gets. I have no interest in secrecy. I want openness, transparency, and my board want that. So we're liaising with the guards in the Garda Síochána. We'll be clear from Gardaí when we can do it, and we'll obviously be working with the families before part of publication. But I do want to do this at as soon as possible time we can.
And just to be clear, because there was some suggestion that the HSE was only prepared to publish the executive summary of the report, whereas the Minister wants the entire report into the public domain. Would you support the Minister's position on that?
Well, I think there's a misperception about an executive summary or what that is. What we are doing is there was a National Independent Review Panel, as you referenced, Katie, at the start, published this. That process is done to give people who contribute and come forward with protection in terms of when it's published. So what we are publishing is not a 2 or 3 page executive summary. This is a quite detailed report that protects people's anonymity, but also published the full details of the findings, the full details of the facts and the full details of the recommendations. So it's not a 2 or 3 page executive
summary. But it's not the full report.
It's the only difference will be, Katie, is it does protect the National Independent Review Panel process, and it protects the request that we have got from the chair of the National Independent Review Panel. So, but, you know, to reassure everybody, all of the gruesome details of this will be published once we clear details with An Garda Síochána and once we work through the final details with the families.
Okay, and but given that we understood that the delay in publication was because the Garda Síochána was saying they wanted to have their investigation concluded before you publish this, given that that is concluded, can we expect this now in the coming days?
I'd expect it soon. We want to immediately pick this up with An Garda Síochána, who've just said this week or in the last 24 hours or so that they've got clearance from the DPP. We literally got a letter last week from An Garda Síochána to say don't. So that's an emerging process that's happened over the last 24 hours.
A week ago An Garda Síochána were still saying don't publish.
Oh yeah, up to about 10 days ago we would have got the letter from An Garda Síochána. So we're happy, we're anxious. Sorry, okay. Happy is the wrong word, but we're content that once we find the right process with the An Garda Síochána to publish and obviously work things through with the families involved.
Okay, and finally then, before I let you go, Paul Reid, there's another story in the front of the Irish Times today telling us that the state could take control of the new national maternity site for 299 years under fresh proposals to settle the long-running dispute over its governance. The paper's reporting that under the terms of the agreement, the HSE will own the building on a ground lease of 299 years and there will be a change to the board composition to include 3 public interest directors. Is this a significant development?
Well, first of all, look, from HSE's perspective, I think from everybody, this is a fantastic project and it's really of key central importance for women's health in Ireland. I know the minister is on the record and he wants to be sure that the governance and structure is right about this, and that's those issues and those policy issues have been led by the department and indeed the minister over the past few weeks, and I'm not privy to those discussions, but the minister has made it clear he wants to bring proposals to government that does safeguards the state investment. So we and the HSE board will consider those proposals when finalised and do it at the sharpest possible term once they're ready for the HSE to review, HSE board to review.
Okay, so they haven't been signed off on yet, or given any, the HSE board hasn't given any indication yet of where it stands in relation to these proposals.
Well, I think the HSE board, I know, are very anxious to see this project through, but they haven't reviewed any further final revisions at this stage.
Okay.
And will do so once they're available.
Okay. Okay, Paul Reid, many thanks for giving us your time today. That's Paul Reid there, CEO of the HSE from our Athlone studio.